All right, thanks, Scott Shannon. Glad you are with us. Toll free, it is 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. Now, around the country, there have been numerous instances where Muslims have been asking for acceptance for their religion and tolerance. And, for example, we had a case in Orlando years ago where a woman wanted to get a license photo wearing, you know, full cover and a burqa, and her face was covered in a veil. That was not allowed. There have been numerous instances, for example, in France about whether or not women in Belgium and whether or not women can wear a burqa in public, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we have been reporting that there are a number of Coptic Christians that have been persecuted recently in Egypt, and they've been kidnapped and tortured and et cetera, et cetera. And the, you know, just one report after another. Now, how are Christians being treated, not just in Egypt, but around the world? How are Christians being treated in predominantly Muslim countries? Well, we have, for example, the country of Iran, and we have the story of two young Iranian women who were imprisoned at one of the worst prisons in Tehran, sentenced to death, and their crime was spreading Christianity. Similarly, we have similar stories coming out of Saudi Arabia, similar stories now coming out of Egypt. Anyway, two of the women that were captured and put in this Iranian prison are now speaking out. I won't give their last name, although you can find it on the website, but Maryam and Marzia, and they're along with Jay Sekulow at the American Center for Law and Justice. Ladies, welcome to the program.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. Now, Islamic law in Iran forbids sharing Christian beliefs. Is that right?
Yes, it's correct.
Yeah. And you put your lives at risk doing so. You went to a seminary in Turkey, as I understand it.
Yes, we moved to Turkey in 2005 for a Christian conference and for studying theology. And then we both decided to go back to Iran because we had this passion to serve our people. And, you know, people in Iran cannot serve the Lord, cannot be a Christian, cannot convert to other religion. And we both decided to go back there and started serving our people.
All right. And you had a couple of what you called secret churches that were in people's homes, correct?
Yes. There are many underground churches in Iran.
And particularly, you had a ministry that was geared for young people and for prostitutes. Many women that had been abandoned by their husbands had no other way to support themselves because they couldn't remarry or they were ostracized by society, right?
Yes. In 2005, when we moved to Iran first, we both had the same vision from God for evangelizing people by distributing Bibles in Iran. Because in Iran, there is just a false and distorted version of Bible, and people cannot find the real version of Bible. But for 2 years, we distributed Bibles in Tehran. We distributed about 20,000 New Testaments in Tehran and a few other cities. And after that, we started two house churches, one for prostitutes and the other one was for young people in our own apartment.
You knew the risk could potentially be death.
Yes, we knew.
And you did it anyway.
Yes, we did.
All right. So let's talk about how you got caught and the prison you went to.
As I told you, we distributed all these New Testaments in Tehran and a few other cities. And also we had these two house churches. Also, we were evangelizing people every day. Whenever we went for shopping, eating at restaurant or doing our chores, we were talking to people and handing them a Bible as a gift. And as you know, all these activities are illegal in Iran.
How did people respond when you would hand them the Bible? Some people, I guess, were accepting of it and others weren't.
Yes, most of Iranian, they are very open to hear about Jesus because most of Iranian, they born as a Muslim, but they are not real Muslim. They are very thirsty about God and they are tired of the wrong rules of Islam. And that's why when we were talking to them, they were very open to hear about God because in Islam, they teach them that God is one who rule over the human race and punish them for the slightest sins. And people think that they cannot be very close to God. And when we talk about God's grace and his love, they are very eager to know more about God.
Do you think that people sold you out, that you were betrayed, that people turned you in?
We have never heard what was the reason that the government found out about us, but after we got released, we heard from some guards that there were some people who reported about our activities. And also we heard that 2 months before we got arrested, the government was watching us, but we never understood what was the reason and who was the person who reported about our activities in Iran.
All right, tell us about your arrest and your time in prison.
The day we got arrested, I got a call from a stranger in the morning. He asked me some question about my car document and told me to go to the police station. And since this call was unusual, I called one of my friends who was a lawyer and asked him to give me some advice. And he assured me that there would be no problem and you can go there. When I went there, they took all my documents, handcuffed me, and told me that you're under arrest of being a Christian and evangelizing.
Okay. And so tell us about this famous prison you were taken to in Tehran. It's notorious for being one that is known for executions by hanging, sudden justice, torture. Did any of that happen to you?
You know, we both believe that Evin is really the heart and brute manifestation of the power of the Ayatollahs and is the symbol of their dominance and strength over Iran. This prison is notorious for arresting, torturing, raping, and executing of many innocents. And actually, before going to this prison, we for the first 14 days, we were in another detention called Vozara. And then we were transferred to Evin prison, and we spent almost 9 months there.
And Evin prison is the one that's notorious for all these things. Did anything like that happen to you? I'm not trying to get personal. Were you beaten? Were you raped? Were you tortured?
We were tortured mentally, which is worse than physical torture.
And what did they do to you?
They sent us to some solitary cells. It's called 209. It's a separate building in Evin prison, and it's famous for its mental and physical torture. And
so you were put in solitary confinement?
Yes.
Okay, and what were the conditions like?
You know, 209, it's as Mariam told, it's very famous for physical and mental torture. And there are very small cells in this building, and there aren't any windows, and it's like a hell. I can say it's like a hell. And we had very heavy interrogation. And for example, for long hours, for about 8-7 hours, we were interrogating by two interrogators, and their behavior was so brutal and humiliating with us.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to get to Jay Sekulow in just a moment here. I just want to finish with your experience. Now you were threatened every day. They threatened to kill you. Told you you would die on any particular day. Correct?
Yes. Every day, almost every day, we heard this from our judges, interrogators, and also from the prisoners.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was when you finally went? I guess you had a if you want to call it a court issue. Tell us what happened there.
I think we had about 10 courts. We went to court for 10 times, and every time in the court, they were trying to convince us to deny our faith in Jesus, and they were threatening us if we wouldn't deny our faith, they would have executed us. And they simply tried to convince us to deny our faith.
Weren't you given a death sentence?
Yes, our sentence was execution by hanging.
Okay, now let me bring in Jay Sekulow. Jay, pretty amazing story, but how did they get out of there?
Yeah, well, usually it's quiet diplomacy and a lot of public pressure. We've got a case, Sean, that you're aware of with Saeed Abedini, who is in prison right now in the Evin prison for exactly the same thing. He was charged with apostasy. He's a U.S. citizen.
The United States, 7 years?
Yeah, he's been sentenced for 8 years, which basically, and I'm sure these two women will tell you, 8 years in the Evin prison is a death sentence. The torture that he's received is both mental and physical, and the physical to the point where he's suffering right now from significant internal bleeding. He was evaluated by a doctor who said he needed to be transferred to a hospital. He has not yet been transferred. His family saw him last week. He's in awful shape. You mentioned the courts, Sean. They're a sham. These are the courts of the Revolutionary Guard. There is no judge. It's the Ayatollah making the decisions. The judge are mere puppets of the Ayatollah. And what needs to be said here, and I'm glad that you're promoting these two women who've experienced this as far as getting this story out. This is, when we talk about Saeed Abedini, he's just one, happens to be an American, but he's one of many that are in these prisons that have been either sentenced to death or have been killed. And there's been hundreds killed. And you don't find out that the person's been killed. The family doesn't find out until the body is actually dropped off back at their house. And as you mentioned, Evan Prison is notorious for its hanging. They have scaffolding outside of the actual prison. And there's hangings, Sean, going on every day. The court systems are a mockery of justice. There is no justice. But international pressure can work and publicity can work. We were fortunate this last week, finally got the Secretary of State Kerry to make a public statement. It took us a long time to get it, but we did get it. And that's important because now other governments, since it's an American system, citizen, will engage. But these prisons, these two women are obviously have experienced it, but they're not even telling you half of what they went through, I'm sure, because it is as brutal as anything we can imagine.
Well, let me ask you, did you women see the hangings?
We didn't see the hangings, but we lost many friends. And when we were in prison, they hanged two, three prisoners. And also when we got released, they executed one of our best friends.
Now, you were also evangelizing inside the prison. Were they aware of that?
Yes, we were evangelizing every day. We were talking to people because, you know, before that we were trying to find prostitutes and, you know, we were trying to find ways to talk to people about Jesus. But in prison, you know, we were more free and we could talk to people. We were in prison and the government couldn't do more than that to us. And we felt more free and we were talking to people every day. And prisoners were so open to hear about Jesus. And also, we always say that Evan Prison was really our church.
Well, it's then. Did you know Saeed, by the way?
Yes, I know Saeed personally. 14 years ago, I was going to the same church that Saeed was going, and I know his wife, and she's a good friend of mine. I'm so sorry that he's in prison. And also, it's not about Saeed, as the Saeed's lawyer said, there are many people who are in prison. One of our goals here is to be a voice for those who don't have any voice here.
Yeah.
You know, some people like Saeed and others like us, they have publicity here in the United States and other countries. But there are people that we know about them, and they don't even have families, they don't have lawyers, and they don't have any voice in Iran, and nobody knows what is going on.
What is the Obama administration doing?
Well, finally, they reacted. It took, under Hillary Clinton, nothing. I mean, we could barely get a statement out. We didn't get a statement out of her. We finally, last week, got the United Nations, our representative to the UN, after the European Union spoke out. Finally, our representative at the UN spoke out during the Human Rights Council hearing and demanded his release. That was followed the next day by Secretary of State Kerry making a statement, which we had asked for. The week before that, Sean, we had a hearing on Capitol Hill. The State Department did not even show up. We did have Saeed's wife came. Fox covered it. You covered it extensively on broadcast. But I will tell you this, it took a tremendous amount of pressure. And Miriam is absolutely correct, as is Marzia, and that is you have to realize that the faces of who you see, whether it's Saeed Abedini or Youssef Nardakhani or your two guests today, they are representative of hundreds, thousands that are in prison. And they're charged, Sean. It's interesting. The Iranian authorities will always say violation of national security. But being a Christian, in their view, is a violation of national security because they view Christianity as a threat.
But there's so many Muslim groups in this country, for example, that they demand equal treatment,
right,
equal rights, acceptance, tolerance, et cetera, et cetera. And yet this is not just an Iranian problem. This is a Saudi Arabia problem. This is a problem in Egypt. This is a problem in many Muslim countries.
Yeah.
Are any Muslim groups or leaders speaking out on behalf of these Christians that are being held?
Not publicly. And I'll tell you this, Sean. You mentioned Egypt. I represent a lot of Coptic Christians, and they are getting slaughtered. In Egypt, our churches are being burnt down, they're being killed, and nothing. We're giving, we are giving money to the Muslim Brotherhood government of Mohamed Morsi, who's authorizing this. They're his thugs doing this. And, you know, and we've got the Secretary of State going over there saying we're going over to help Egypt with no conditions. You know, my goodness, let's have conditions here. I mean, the idea that we're just giving them, you know, billions of dollars and not expecting anything in return. Believe me, we'll get nothing in return if this is the case. And yes, Sean, it's bad. The entire Arab Spring, the president's concept of an Arab Spring, which he put forward in 2009 when he made that speech in Cairo,
it's
turned into an absolute disaster, especially for the minority religions.
All right, Jay Sekulow and Miriam and Marzia, thank you for telling your story. I hope people pay attention to it, and I hope our government gets off their backsides and does something about it. And appreciate you all telling it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean, for having us.
Thanks, Sean.
Toll free. We'll continue to follow this story.